The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
We'll start off with county finals, Conan, and I suppose the big story out of the county finals is East Kerry hammered last year's All-Ireland finalist, Dr. Crokes, 2-14-1-7. That's after Dr. Crokes kind of got a late goal by Gavin White. So a really convincing win for East Kerry. And all the talk in Kerry is how Dr. Crokes dominated the last decade, but there's another team going to dominate Kerry club football for the next decade, and that's East Kerry with the age profile of the team and the fact that Rathmore were relegated to intermediate this year, which frees up Paul Murphy and Shane Ryan to go play with them. Darren Moynihan wasn't even available yesterday because he was out injured. They seem to, even though their team isn't littered with names that jump out at you, you know, it seems to be a lot of younger talented players.
Yeah, and there was an amazing picture with David Clifford and Evan Cronin afterwards, and two of them looked very emotional hugging each other, and I thought, Jesus, such a great advertisement for regional teams, isn't it? Like, you know, and all these players who aren't playing senior football have now won a senior club championship. It's unreal. Like the scenes afterwards, I didn't think they would care as much playing for East Kerry than they would for their clubs. But
for them to be that, for them to be that close and that well managed, we know all of, we've talked before about the challenges that these area teams have. It's Spa, Glenflesk and Fossa and Rathmore and all that area, that how to just get them together when they have their own club championships to worry about. So there would be an element of a League of Nations about it where they just all join together and Harlem Globetrotters and they don't train, they don't like each other, they're rivals as it is. But they definitely seem to work. I saw that picture that you're talking about. Now the Kerry captain is going to be from East Kerry, which, like, I mean, it has to be David Clifford, in my opinion. I know he's only young, but the other option is Jack Sherwood, Darren Moynihan. You know, I don't think Paul Murphy or Shane Ryan, just because Rathmore has to be from who played with them this year. I think Kerry have fallen into this trap before. Jack Sherwood isn't guaranteed to start for Kerry. How can he be captain? And why, another question is, why are Kerry persisting with this antiquated kind of policy of making the captain come from the county champions? Most counties have moved on from that now.
Who's your captain? Like, that's who is the captain of the team?
Exactly. Stephen Cluxton would never be Dublin captain other than under this. Like, it's madness.
It is madness. It's good though. I think David Clifford would be a good captain for them, and I know he's young, but Michael Murphy, was he 1 year out of under 21s when Donegal made him captain 2012, and he was a natural fit. I remember thinking at the time that he was young, and now you laugh at yourself back. And Clifford holds himself like a captain. Like, he, you know, he's got real inner belief, and it's like, now he knows he has to go win games for East Kerry or Kerry. He knows he's the main man. Like, I think he'd be a great choice.
Yeah, because there's enough people say there's too much pressure on him. David Clifford has more pressure on him than any other player in the country. That's not going to add greatly to it. He's not a shy individual. He's, you know, he's well able for it. Michael Murphy is a great example. And the thing is, he's guaranteed to start. It causes too much nonsense, because I tell you why. Jack Sherwood's captain, picked as captain. He doesn't start. Now it's thrown at David Clifford without ever having to, you know, process this in his mind or become a good captain. So, like, it is silly. It's a silly policy anyways, but if you're going to do it, he's the only one that's guaranteed to start. His brother put his hand up to be in the mix next year, but that might be a bit too much pressure on Paddy. But yeah, so it's definitely an interesting one. It's something Kerry need to sort out.
It really is. It really is. I was actually just thinking at that game, the Austin Stacks, would they have been training?
Well, that was it. I texted a friend last night. So they have been training. Yeah, they've been training away because train away during the league. But the fact that Crokes were in semi-finals with three area teams and the fact that East Kerry were so strong, Austin Stacks have had an idea that this was going to happen, and it's after coming true now. Can't imagine they're training at the intensity that, a team knowing they're playing Nemo Rangers. So now they play Nemo Rangers next week, a team that didn't win Kerry, against the Nemo Rangers team who just scraped over Newcastle West at the weekend. It doesn't have that much of a kind of... This is a... Cara Finn's All-Ireland to lose again, really.
No, it is.
Because you have four teams in the semis in Ulster that have never won in Ulster. Never mind getting into an Irish semi-final. You've nothing coming out of Munster. You've Ballyboden or Portlaoise. Ballyboden or Portlaoise would be decent, but you'd imagine Cara Finn would handle either of them. If Cara Finn hold their heads, all the rest are dropping around them.
But they're doing their best to not hold their heads as well. Like, we'll not analyse the game here, but they don't look as convincing or scary as they used to.
Yeah, but they get scary in Croke Park.
Yeah,
they just need to get to Croke Park.
Yeah, a bit of dry land underneath them.
That's it, exactly. The other county final was St Thomas's... The kind of time that lay to beat Liam Mellows were 11-7 up at half time, and they scored 11 points from the first 11 shots, and St Thomas's came back to beat them in the end. Very interesting that Fintan Burke, who was injured, did his cruciate in the All-Ireland Club Final against Ballyhale back in March. I remember that happening because he'd been playing well in that. I'm pretty sure he's wearing number 7 that day. He was supposed to be gone for the whole year, battled his way back, came on in the second half and scored 2 points, which pretty much won the county final for his team. So that's a nice little story there.
Yeah, that's amazing. What's the longest injury you've had? Like, have you been out for that length of time before?
No, not really. Probably not.
I just can't comprehend, like, you know, being told you're out for the whole year, so start focusing on next year, and then these people then just somehow get it back for a county final of all things.
That's the thing. The weird thing about the club is that, you know, that All-Ireland final, the 6 months that he needed would get him back for the end of this year in the new competition. So it's definitely a weird one. But congratulations to him. David Burke was flying in the midfield as well, apparently. In the other county final from the weekend, Clonmel Commercials hammered JK Bracken. So a little bit disappointed. JK Bracken's their first ever county final, new enough club. Clonmel Commercials, we know how good they are. And when Ballyboden won the All-Ireland Club in 2015-16, they were steeped to get over Clonmel Commercials in Portlaoise in the All-Ireland semi-final. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
All the steps that were taken for the equalising point Captain Nelson. So Clonmel Commercials are a very good club team. So they'll have a say actually in that Munster Championship now. They play Milltown Malbay next week, while Austin Stacks play Nemo Rangers, you know, so it's not too bad. Cara Finn, we'll get into the provincial matches as well. Cara Finn obviously beat Ballintubber. This was a boring enough match to watch. I was watching it, like, it was all over when Cara Finn went 6-1, 9-6. I made the mistake of Googling the result. It was like, okay, this is a little bit boring. Did they hammer them or did it? And then I was like, oh Jesus, Ballintubber make a game of it. I'm just keep watching.
Hang on here.
But it wasn't. Cara Finn got a few nice points, but they never really caught fire. You know, when Carfin score a point, it's usually very easy on the eyes.
Yeah.
Remember Lundy gave a lovely diagonal ball in and it was laid off to Farraher, and but you know, they're just not, they don't seem to be the huge force, but the weather and the time of year, and they're just coming off winning a county final replay last week, and they probably celebrated that, and they just didn't look to be firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, they were quite deep as well, weren't they? I mean, Gary Sice, it was a brilliant turnover, in fairness to him, but I was like, what's he doing?
Sice was dropping way deeper than he usually did. And that was one thing that I noticed. And their manager said after the game, Kevin O'Brien, he says, we lost control of the game after going 6 points up and gave away some frees. We were getting players back, but we were getting them back a bit too deep. We did it in a few Galway Championship games too, so it's an area to work on. And that is not a feature of Cara Finn. I know that they can drop bodies back around the middle third, but Sice never drops that far back, because Sice is an option to move the ball on if they win it back. And it didn't look any... And it's not like Ballintubber have this lethal full forward line that they needed to do this. It was a weird one from Cara Finn, unless they've changed their tactics slightly this year, and maybe that's why they don't look as impressive.
Yeah, maybe it's a response to all these club teams who are flooding men forward, so it is becoming a bit more basketball-esque. But Ian Burke was out around the middle of that as well, and you're like, oh man, get back inside, use your
hands.
Don't
mind Burke, but I definitely saw Sice running back without chasing a man.
Yeah.
He was running back that way, as in he's coming back to cover a space.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not
He
Cara
was
Finn.
Very... he was like behind the halfback line at one
stage. He did get taken off, which is unusual for Sice. So.
Right, yeah. But I did, like, I remember keeping an eye, like, the ball got turned over. He turned one over, and twice I was sort of keeping an eye in the bottom of the picture to see if he would come bursting back in this. But he was coming very late onto the play, and just luckily for him, the play was slow, so he was able to get back involved again. But
and plus, I spoke to him on the show. He does not have the engine for that one. Yeah. We joked about the fact that he wants to be doing. So that was definitely a weird one. And I noticed that Killian O'Connor was up to his old tricks anyways, standard Killian O'Connor. Kieran Fitzgerald got a punch in the side of the head as he was going past him, and the hands went up. Now, I have to say, was it Plunkett got a yellow card on Sice?
I thought that was a harsh enough one.
Unbelievably harsh. Yeah. Now, we know, we've talked about this in the intercounty game. You actually can't slap a fella. You can't slap the ball if a fella's holding it in his chest now. If you could try to slap that, you know, like you always would, let's try and get it out.
Yeah.
The player is taking that hit and they're flying backwards and it's looking like a clothesline.
And they're screaming as well.
What Plunkett did there was nothing wrong with that. It was an aggressive kind of slap to dislodge the ball. And Sice made the most of it and got a yellow. And they're all doing this. It's gone to the point where that tackle is a waste of your time, especially if someone's running past you at speed. They will take that impact and they will lift their feet up off the ground and they're down on their back.
Yeah.
And it looks in real time like a clothesline.
Yeah.
Players just have to stop doing it, because I'm not sure how we can stop players from taking the hit and making the most out of it.
Yeah, and like the ref was so sure it was a yellow card offence, like, because he obviously just saw the impact, probably heard something, and he was having none of it, like, you know, and it reacted so quickly to it, but when you saw it slow down,
it was not a yellow card.
It was nowhere near his neck or face, or it just came across his chest.
And would you say you're disappointed with Sice there? I would slightly, because I know when Sice started playing the game, he never would have done that.
Yeah.
You would have rocked through that hard impact. It would have slowed you down. But you're not flying back. You're all flying back now. I think it's disappointing, but it's hard to know how to stop. Is it diving or is it a forward going? Right, well, he's made sure to put a good hit onto me. It's going to slow me down. It's aggressive. And I'm going to make the most out of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the lesson here is, for if a player's running past you, do not put your hand out to slap the ball, or you could easily get sent off.
I'm trying to think of the equivalent if I was in that position, and like it's at centre back, like, you know, when you feel a strong hand on you like that, you're stopped, somebody's got a hand on you, so you're in big trouble. Now there's going to be bodies around you, the ball's just thrown in. I would be dying for a free in that situation, because otherwise I'm going to get turned over on the 45. So in a way, it's not like I'm condoning diving, but I can see, like, if I felt the contact, I would definitely be looking at the ref, trying to, like, you know, get a foul out of it, just to save myself from losing
the
ball.
Maybe it is a byproduct of all the players that are back now, that if you're slowed down, you could be surrounded. So if he slows me down with a good hit, I'm going to hit the ground, because I get the free, because I'm not going to get too much further anyways. Do you know? But, like, I mean, a lot of the time, why I would say to defenders not to do it is, how often do you see a ball being dislodged in that scenario anyway? You don't. It's often a token gesture to hit, and you're being silly because he's just going to fly back. I'm repeating myself now. If a fella's flying past you, he's going to use his four steps with the ball tucked tightly in his hand. You're not going to dislodge it usually.
Yeah, it's usually in any form of tackling, like, you wouldn't like this. It's the second man who dislodges it. Like, you know, so if Plunkett stands up strong there and just stops Sice will turn around, try to take a solo, and somebody else will be in then to take it off.
Yeah,
like,
that's
the person who usually turns the ball over. But it sort of sounds like we're excusing Killian O'Connor. His was straight to the face. That was not like the Michael Plunkett.
No, that was a clear yellow card. That was a dirty challenge, really, because he looked like he knew what he was doing. And he dived for a penalty as well, Killian O'Connor did, in the first half. And he clearly dived. He didn't appeal it. He got straight up and started chasing his man. But I don't know, I've seen him doing this before. And I don't think that's, like, just because he runs after his man and acts honest and goes, oh, well, I didn't appeal it. He still did it. So if that penalty was given, he'd stand up and take that penalty. The fact it wasn't given, he jumps up and chases his man like, oh, well, I didn't appeal it. Well, now, in some way, I wasn't looking for it. But you dived.
Yeah.
You made the referee make that quick call. And just because you're acting a little bit honestly after that doesn't cover the dishonesty of the dive in the first place.
Yeah, it does look like he's just trying to give the referee a decision to make. Like, and as you say, if he got the penalty, he would definitely take it. He wouldn't say, ah, no, actually.
Yeah.
Because he did go down looking for a penalty.
Yeah. Like, you know? Yeah.
And that's sort of what he seems to do anyway in his general play. He would hit somebody a slap and put his hand up and carry on, or he would go down, carry on. You know, he'd be involved off the ball, a third man tackle, but look like he's not doing anything, carry on.
I'm starting to think, like, he's a madman on the field. He's like, he's a loose cannon of the highest order. Yeah. I think he just loses, because you hear interviews, like, he's a totally level-headed fella.
Mm.
But he definitely turns into a crazy man on the field that just win-at-all-costs mentality type thing, doesn't
he? Yeah, I think we talked about this before. I think you were saying that maybe he just needs to go to that place to be focused in the game, like, you know, like, maybe that's just what he needs to be doing, playing on the edge and doing these things. Like, he just doesn't seem to care about anything else other than what's happening on the pitch.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's a weird one.
So talk to me about this Slocknail Dunloy rivalry, or was there a rivalry? Because I saw the Slocknail manager, Slocknail won the Ulster final for the fourth time in 5 years, or the third time in 4 years. Time in 4 years. A fired up Slocknail manager, Mickey McShane, said afterwards, "We're coming out to prove ourselves. You saw out there who was the best hurling team." So that, the kind of fighting words coming after a team that's after winning. So unless there was a little bit of over and back between the two camps before this, I know Slocknail lost to Cushendall last year, so they lost their Ulster title, and maybe you're a little bit hurt by that.
Yeah, I mean, they played Dunloy in 2017 in the Ulster semi-final, and Slocknail went on and won Ulster. Back then, like, Dunloy, the sort of feeling was, and there was interviews sort of in the build-up to this week, was that the Dunloy team is very young, and they've grown up, and they've got, like, 2 years of physical training under their belt, so they thought that the gap would be narrowed. And I think that game sort of hurt Dunloy as well, because they were 6 points up, and Slocknail came back and beat them. And yeah, maybe there was a bit of, I don't know if disrespect is the right word, but, like, you know, people just assumed that Dunloy would be better.
Perceived disrespect.
Yeah.
You know, these sensitive players. Oh, well, they said they're a better hurling team than us.
And it doesn't take much, because you were showing me this quote this morning, and I was like, oh, well, Chrissy McCaig just posted something about so-called experts as well. Like, so, you know, this could just be a prediction at the bottom of a newspaper roundup or whatever. But I'm sure, look, we know all about it with the Glenties boys as well. Like, it doesn't take much to fire people up. So, yeah, like, there did seem to be that. Maybe Slocknail, sort of like the Guido thing, just a bit sort of, yeah, felt like, you know, hang on a second, we're the powerhouse here in Ulster. Like, you know, why are people just overwriting us?
Yeah, so they need anything just to get that bit of motivation. Brendan Rodgers scored 3 from play. I'm always fascinated by fullbacks who play in the forwards for hurling or football. They're kind of over and back. How you can change your mentality to be a forward in hurling but be a full back in football, I don't know. It's a weird one. You either choose to be a defender in all codes when you're younger, or you choose to be a forward. You can't just mix and match this Rodgers.
My God, though, you would love him as a hurler. Like, he just gets the ball head down and runs like he does with Stockdale.
Yeah,
the
pretty much. He's attacking a full back, as you'll see.
Yeah, he's a runner. Like, I remember, like, as football, in fairness, he used to always be wing back with Stockdale and with St. Pat's Mahara, and he was just this powerhouse wing back. But and he was just playing wing forward for Derry when he broke onto the scene, because he was playing with hurlers before football. And, like, he's a massive loss to Derry. Now he still plays in the Ulster Championship for them, but geez, he's a joy to behold.
Okay, right, well, I must watch that All-Ireland semi-final, so that'll be an interesting one. Portlaoise won in the Leinster Championship, very dramatic circumstances. We know Derry Gonnelly beat Trillick the week before with a sudden death penalty. This wasn't sudden death penalty, because St. Pat's missed their first one, so Portlaoise just had to make sure they scored all 5, and they scored all 5, so they won 5-4 on penalty. So that was interesting. Graham Brody came on as a sub and scored one of the penalties you like to hear Conan. Not really surprising, really, that Graham Brody put his hand up to take one of the penalties. Craig Rogers got the winning penalty. He obviously missed a penalty against Kilmacud Crokes last year at a really important time. A penalty that he hit very well. It was the Ballyboden goalkeeper guessed the right way and got his hand to it. Rodgie stuck it in the bottom right this time. The last against Ballyboden, he tried to whip it into the top corner, actually. It was a very confident penalty, but he missed it. And both managers, Niall Rigney and Casey O'Brien, are saying the same thing after this match. Portlaoise, by the way, looked like they were going out. They were 2-7 to 10 points down in extra time. Pat's got a goal in extra time. You know, in these really low scoring games, now you're in extra time and you can see the goal. Portlaoise looked like they were completely gone in the battle back, and they got their own goal to stay in it. So they showed a lot of heart, even though Portlaoise continue saying that they're not playing that well this year. But Niall Rigney and Casey O'Brien were saying the same thing. Niall Rigney said it was an awful way for any team to lose. I've never seen anything like that in football before. It's tough on Pats. They're probably the dominant team for a long time, but we show great resilience to come back into the game. Good analysis at the end there. He's probably right on that. Casey O'Brien said, it looks like we're going to get over the line, but a draw after extra time and then losing on penalties is a cruel way to go out. We would have no problem going down to Portlaoise and playing a replay. Maybe if you play it on Wednesday night under lights, it's a better way of going out in penalties. I disagree that that's a better way of going out, that you're going until Wednesday night now and it's stepping over on your next game preparations. It's absolutely not. Why are people so against penalties? Because I saw Richie Donnelly tweet about this over the weekend and he deleted the tweet since.
Oh, has he?
He was giving out about foreign mechanics deciding GA games. And here's the thing. Penalties are penalties. So one, a fella misses a penalty. Well, then do we ban free kicks because a fella might have a free kick to win the game and he might miss it?
Yeah.
So what is the problem here? Penalties are part of the game. So if there's a penalty in the last kick of the game in normal time, that's okay. But deciding on a game on a penalty shootout is not okay. That's cruel. Isn't it? It's already part of the game. You're using it to decide it so that it's a shootout and it's not going to a silly replay on a Wednesday night under lights and ruining the game. Ruining a team's preparation for the next round. It's a great way to finish games. It's great drama. I'm delighted it's in GEA and I don't know why this... do you know what it is? It's without thinking about it and they're just copying the kind of... you hear it in soccer, it's a cruel way to go out. Well, is it any more cruel than any way to go out?
Yeah, exactly.
Players miss points from play.
That's very cruel.
There's a villain at the end of every match because somebody's messed up or somebody's done something.
Yeah, that's it. It's cruel, but someone has to be decided. And I actually thought, I look at the Glentys example, I think it's more cruel to make them play three games and then play 3 days before.
Much crueler. Much crueler to go play a county final on a Wednesday night, celebrate it, and then have to take a day off work on the Thursday to celebrate the next day and then have to play it the weekend. That's bloody cruel.
Yeah.
Finish the thing.
And you've been given 60 minutes to win the match and then you're given an extra 20 minutes to go and win the match. So you've got the chance to go and decide it there and then. And there's plenty of opportunities to do it. The Richie Donnelly thing, the foreign sport, I just thought, is penalties, are they a new thing in GA?
They're part of the game.
Exactly.
We haven't just borrowed these just for the shootout.
We've taken a thing that we do in the game. It's right, we've tried everything else, now let's do this to finish it
and
off.
And it's important to point out that we've tried free kicks from the 45 and they were bloody dull.
Oh, terrible.
They were crap. And from reading about this, I didn't see this now, but from being on a WhatsApp group of lads that were down at it, that was great excitement even though it was a freezing cold day, but it's gone to penalty. Yeah. You tell me any fan in the world doesn't love penalties. They love them.
Yeah.
The drama of them
it's
is
class.
Fantastic.
It's why everybody talks about the Champions League being the best competition in the world. Now, there's a lot of elements to that, but a lot of it is the second leg always goes to penalties and it's just brilliant.
How many times have you been watching extra time and you're like, just forward it on and let's get to the penalties?
Exactly. Get rid of extra time, straight to penalties. We've solved it.
There's a lot of games I would like just to be decided on penalties without even playing the two teams playing each other. So Portlaoise now go on to play Aroge, who beat Sarsfield pretty well. So that was a turn up for the books. Pretty surprised about that. So that's going to be a fantastic semi-final between Aroge, who've won 5 Leinsters, and Portlaoise, who've won 7 Leinsters. Two traditionally strong Leinster teams, two neighbours, and that'll probably be a neutral venue. So definitely looking forward to going to that between two great clubs. Talking about Carlo, our friend Stephen Poacher announced last night that he's leaving Carlo. So I don't think anyone in Leinster football will have any kind of tears in their eyes about him leaving Leinster football. It'd be a much better championship not having him in it with all of his antics. And ironically, I suppose, for a self-promoter like Poacher, he leaves Carlo in exactly the same position he found him in Division 4. Coming off a couple of absolute hammerings the year before. Meath beat them by 15 points and Longford beat them by 10 points. So you can talk about you can self-promote and you can do what you want. And a lot of managers always say, and coaches always say, I like to have left the team in a better position than I found them. Unfortunately, that hasn't been the case for our buddy Poacher. I have nothing more to say on that, Conan.
I think he did. In fairness to our buddy Poacher, he gave him a few moments in the sun, him and Turlough, that they will remember.
The Kildare win will be the highlight of his time with Carlo. All cruelty aside, that was a fantastic kind of ambush on a Kildare team that weren't expecting, none of us were expecting Carlo to do that. Didn't evolve them over the time, came back with the same game plan, got in problems with referees, got suspended. And to be honest with you, outside of some people in Carlo, I don't think anybody would be too worried about not seeing him involved with an inter-county team. But anyways,
it's a cruel way to end a segment.
Yeah. Not a segment, it's just that story.
Straight to penalties.
Here's a nicer little story is Gary Castle beat Ratoat 3-11 to 2-12. It was a convincing enough win. Ratoat scored 1-4 without reply at the end to make it look like it was close, but it wasn't. They were missing Brian McMahon for some reason, I'm not too sure. Interestingly here, Desi Dolan went off at half time, which is par for the course.
Had a chat with his brother, and then the other manager decided he was taking him off.
Which is an interesting one, is Gary Castle were 1-9-5 up at half time. So the dynamic of this, we know the county final, he was whipped off because they needed to shake it up with a big man on the edge of square. This game was under control when Desi went off. He'd scored 3 frees. His brother Gary, who is co-manager, not manager, his partner or wife, not sure, just had a baby the night before. So he was up in the middle of the night. So he got home just the next morning, get a couple of hours sleep, and went then to collect Desi to go to the match. So I thought that was a nice little story about that. It's not like he had to play or anything. He was just on. So maybe, I don't know, he goes and collects Desi the next morning and then takes him off at half time. So I don't know.
It's a nice little story.
It's what club football is all about, isn't it,
Conor?
I'll take your line, right?
he only has 30 minutes and I thought he retired. That's the real beauty of all this. He retired after the county final.
No, he retired from Westmeath club football because he'll never be back there again.
He hasn't retired
full stop. To be honest with you, he's going to retire now when they go out. This lad's milking it of the highest order. You can't retire from, so he's retired from inter-county football.
Yeah.
Then he retires from Westmeath club football and now he'll just retire full stop. Will never play football. He'll have 3. Mark O'Shea had 2 and we were slagging him.
Well, he's retired from Leinster quarterfinals now. Semi-final.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, you could do that after every round. Right, there's another 2 stories I want to finish up on here. We'll cover 1 or 2 more of the club matches in performance of the weekend. Obviously Desi Hutchinson is coming up in part 2, but the Clare County Board have reported social media abuse to police. So Joe Cooney has said that a complaint has been lodged with Clare GAA by an employee, which is Pat Fitzgerald. It arises from social media and what has been put up on it, not alone over the past couple of months, but the past couple of years. So that's Davey's father. I think he gets a lot of grief on social media, and the county board has handed it over to the police. Joe Cooney continues on. Other officers of Clare G have also been badly maligned on social media. It's not good enough for people working as volunteers for the GEA, whether at club or county level, to be subjected to that. In fact, it's a disgrace. Now, I don't know. I was reading the Clare Champion and he said that one of the main sources of the abuse is the Clare Facebook page. characters you're going to have commenting on this and saying stuff. Now, I don't know what was said, so it's hard to comment on it. I just kind of think when the police are under resourced, you see what's happened up in Cavan and kidnapping and torture because police are under resourced, and then you have the Clare County Board crying about some abuse on social media. I'm of the opinion that just don't read it, or unless it's something completely libel, or defamatory. Geez, if it's saying you're useless at your job, if this is the kind of level, then grow up. But I don't know what the level of abuse was, so it's a difficult one. I just think in the current climate, after hearing what happened in Cavan, to be handing over to the police comments on a clear Facebook page, I wouldn't be kind of doing something like that.
Yeah, no, and the fact that it's Facebook is a little bit interesting, because most people, they don't have anonymous accounts on Facebook, you know, so even know who it is doing it, and they're obviously happy to put their name. Well, you could, but like most people with their Facebook page, it's just their own page.
The person themselves, yeah.
It's much easier to create an anonymous Twitter account. People tell me. I don't know. But, and then, like, you know, the Claire, I don't think they would do this, but they can moderate that, and if there is anything libelous, they should just take it down
just
themselves.
Block
like,
it.
That's what the police would tell them to do. Like, you know, sort this out yourselves.
To me, this looks a little bit precious. Now, again, I have to qualify this all the time by saying, if there was something serious being said, then I'm, you know, not being fair on them here. But to me, this is a county board being a little bit precious.
It almost, like, and this sounds a bit mad, but like it nearly comes with a territory of a county board job, doesn't
yes.
it? Like, you don't take it to be popular. Like, there's every other club in the county are not going to like what you're up to, you know? Like, no matter if you are doing a good job or not, like, you're going to have people who don't like what you're doing. So, yeah, it's like you think these people have a thick skin anyway. Again, we don't know exactly what was said, but yeah. Stay off the Claire Facebook.
Stay off my opinion on social media and Twitter and things like that, and is if you're anyway sensitive, stay off it. It's not for you. There is assholes all over the place. You can't say anything without someone disagreeing with you or taking the polar opposite opinion of what you said, or else twisting what you said and creating some sort of controversy out of what you said. These are people are complete and utter muppets. Avoid the social media. I do that now more so than ever, and I'm much happier in my life for doing it.
Yeah, I always think of it when I see like Facebook comments like that. I always wonder, you know, if one of my mates like posted a Facebook comment that would pop up on my feed that they'd done it, and I'd be like, what are you asking? Like, you start writing back to them, slagging them off, or tag your mates and going, look at this boy getting all hot under the collar. And do you know, it doesn't really happen in the real world, I don't think. It seems like these people who would be posting it maybe don't have that much going on, and it's just like, yeah, this is where they're getting their fun. Just having, like, you know, a rant at somebody, and they're not getting attention from anybody else, so they're doing this.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point.
All right, we'll be back with Daisy Hutchinson.
I remember my mother, Gladys de Mercy, now she's dead. She's 8 years this year. She never saw me hurling live, but she always went to the matches, to the hotel, the two finals, and we got off the bus after the first one, and the first person to meet me was my mother, and she said, look, what's meant to be is meant to be. She said, keep the head up. I said, grand. No problem, ma'am. Thanks. 96, back to the hotel again, first person off the bus, my mother. Says, ah, look, what's meant to be? I said, man, we'll give it a fucking right.
All right, so Desi Hutchinson scored 5 points yesterday for Ballygunres to beat Patrick Swell by 8 points. Pretty convincing in the end. He joins us on the line now. So that was it, Desi. Pretty convincing, even though at halftime we were probably a little bit nervous.
Yeah, it was. We started the game well. I think we were 5 or 6 points up there at one stage, and we kind of, they had a purple patch there just before halftime. Got a good few scores on the board. I think we went down 2 up. But it was kind of whoever came out and started the second half the best was going to go on and win the game. And thankfully, we done that. We really took control there in the middle of the second half. And we, I think we got a good few scores without any reply. So we were delighted with that. And we finished the game strong as well.
Yeah, you definitely did. So you were 6-1 up. You were flying it, really. It took Patrick, well, 20 minutes even to get a point. And then suddenly you're only going in, I think it was 7-6 actually at half time. What was said at that stage?
I was just kind of, they changed their system a little bit in the first half. They kind of tried to block the space in our full forward line. So the boys out the field kind of took a little bit of time to adapt to that. We kind of played into their hands a small bit. But at halftime, then we just kind of changed it up and stick to what we know. And thankfully, that worked. We trusted our hurling, and we came out on top of that. In the second half, we were a bit more cuter with the ball and a bit shorter at times.
Yeah.
And thankfully, the lads got the scores from out the field.
There was more scores from out the field, but in the first half, the feature was obviously your 4 points from play, and, you know, you'd pass it around a few short stick passes and then put it into the space in either corner for you to, your movement into both corners is really good.
Yeah, look, it's something we've worked on, and thankfully we can adapt to both ways, whether it's hitting it, getting the couple of short passes and hitting it in long, or whether we're trying to score from out the field. So look, we're able to adapt to both ways. It all depends on the way Patrick Swell were setting up. So we just clicked on quickly to what they were doing, and thankfully then the space opened up again towards the end of the game for us inside as well. So it was very good.
Yeah, it's almost Cork-esque, I thought, from watching you yesterday at some parts. Like, it's not easy to execute that kind of a game plan in the winter, you know, under pressure.
No, it's not. And look, your hurling has to be really on top of the game for the short passes and stuff. But look, it's the way the modern hurling's going. If you're running with the ball, you have to play around the systems that are put in place. So look, it was tough, and they were a very good team, but thankfully we just stuck to what we knew, and we've been working on it a good few years now. Well, I'm only back, but the lads, they've been putting this in place for a good while, and we're starting to be successful with it.
Yeah, so you wear number 10, because I was looking at you following kind of since you've been back with Ballygunner, and I'm looking at the reports, and you're picked at wing forward, and you're getting these scores, but you play in the full forward line. You play in a two-man full forward line, it looks to me, and kind of just never stop moving in there, and then take your man on when you get the ball. Is that fair analysis of your game?
Yeah, I suppose it is. Look, all six forwards are comfortable in all six positions, really, so we have the license to get around the forwards wherever it is. And look, thankfully myself and Peter Hogan have been going well inside, and yeah, their movement is starting to really click with each other, so it's nice to have him in there. We're playing off the same page kind of, so we're starting to click. But as I said, we have the license to cover any of the six positions in the forward, and we have the adaptability to do that, so we're delighted.
Yeah, your young players came good yesterday. Like Michael Mahoney, he was there last year. He obviously got a good few points for from play, important one. Paddy Levy, I thought was interesting. He man-marked Keane Lynch. He's only out of minor. So, like, I mean, that was a huge call before the game.
Yeah, it was. And look, Paddy's been flying for us all year. And Mike, yesterday, he topped up with four unbelievable points in the second half. And he's probably not known for his scoring abilities. Usually, like, he's real dog out in midfield. He works so hard, he gets big tackles in, and he kind of sets up the play for other people. But yesterday he stood up when we needed him and got four unbelievable points. And look, Paddy's only out of minor, and he's like a lad that's been there years, so he is, in fairness to him, and hopefully he'll keep that up for us. But he is a top hurler, and he's probably one to watch.
Yeah, he was described as an old minor by your manager, that he's been around a while, he's only 18.
Yeah, he is. He played minor there for a good few years, and I think they won two of them, and he was kind of a main figure of that. And look, he's really slotted in well with us. He's like myself, there's three or four of us new into the team this year, and I think you need that in every squad, a bit of freshness. And look, we're bringing that, and look at the people we have around us is massive too, with the experience of the lads.
Yeah, so you mentioned you're back in. So, everybody at this stage knows your story, Desi, that you're with Brighton and you were released last May. Then you went playing soccer with Waterford, and did you play the season out with them? And then you obviously would have seen Ballygunner win the Munster last year from the outside, and now you're involved in it this year.
Yeah, it's mad. I came back in May 2018, I think it was, and played with Waterford here for the remainder of that season. And then just kind of was weighing up what I was going to do, whether I was to come back or whether I was trying to keep going with the soccer. But in my own mind, I was really heading towards getting back involved with the lads. And thankfully I did. But as you said, yeah, this time last year I was looking from the stand. I think it was Ballyhea game. Everyone was up in the heap. Philip got a last minute winner. And then I came back in after the Munster final. So since then I've been just head down, working hard, trying to catch up with the lads, and it's working at the moment.
Yeah, because like you played with Waterford underage right up until under 16. You would have been Shane Bennett and Patrick Curran's age group. You know, so hurling was a huge part of your life before you went to England.
Yeah, it was. It was, look, our house at home is a huge house. I had two brothers there yesterday. Like they played in numerous county finals and Munster championships. So I had that. I knew all about it, really, with the two lads being involved for so many years, you know. But yeah, like, our house at home is it's a GA race by miles, so it was easy in that regard.
Yeah, and is it weird being from a GAA family and having your brothers, you know, playing with Ballygunner when you're over in England? And for me, I would be looking at you kind of being jealous of you, whereas you're looking back maybe, you know, over there on your own, and you might be thinking the opposite way around.
Yeah, look, it's always going to be like that. It's a weird one. They're probably wishing they were me and I was wishing I was them at times. It's just the way it goes. Look, a lot of people, I suppose, would love to have a professional lifestyle, but not all it's made out to be, especially if you're standing out over there. But like, look, everyone kind of thinks it's the big, nice lifestyle, but it's just as good being at home here when county titles.
Yeah, what is it? What is the lifestyle like, Desi? Is it like a dog eat dog world? I'm thinking of, you know, in your position, hoping to keep a contract, you know, going out on loan, that falling through. You know, your kind of life before you came home doesn't sound great, but I suppose when it was going well for you and you were on the up, you know, like, give us a sense of what.
It's a bit of both. It's always up and down over there. Like, you, 1 week you could be on the biggest high ever, but the next week it's lowest to lowest. Like, it's just the way it goes, and that's the way it'll always be. Like, until you've played probably 60, 70 games for your first team, then you know you're really doing well. Do you know, that kind of way?
But yeah.
As a 16-year-old going over there, it's tough to get that breakthrough. And as you say, loan moves and trying to get them and not working out. It's all part of it, but it is tough, like, you know.
Yeah, that's it. I saw you describing it being not in control of your own life, which you're obviously not, because other people are making decisions for you. You're being sold, you're being moved, you know, you're not deciding
exactly,
that.
That's it. Like, you never really know what's going on. It's always in other people's control. And look, you think you could be doing unbelievably well, but you might have a manager that thinks you're not. And then next minute a new manager comes in, he thinks you're doing unbelievably well. You just never know what way it's going to go. Like, some managers only last 2 months there, you know, and then you have to try, and another manager comes in maybe with a different style of play, and you have to try and adapt to that, and it mightn't suit you the way the first manager brought you in. You know, there's so many little things that are caught up in it that you just never know where you stand. But as I said, once you've played them kind of 60, 70 games for your first team, then you're on your way to being successful, I suppose. But up until then, it's very very cutthroat, and you never know when you might be out the door. It could be a new contract landed on your lap as well, you know, that kind of way. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's weird. You made it was another thing I thought was very interesting that you said, was that the dressing room in England, in the soccer, that players are looking out for themselves more so. And I suppose you understand in the context of keeping their job pretty much, that in GAA you don't have that pressure. Money's not a factor, and you know, it's more of a team environment.
Yeah, it is. Look, you're over there, and there could be 80 young lads from the academy looking for one spot in the first team. So you need to look out for yourself, like. And it's just, you actually get, at first I was going over and I was coming from GAA teams and a local team here in Waterford, and it's all team environment. Then you go over there and you could walk in the door and people won't even talk to you. That's the way it is. But as you go on, you understand why. And I became one of them people where you're in there and you don't want to see someone else doing well and they don't want to see you do well, but you just have to get on with it, and hopefully that you'll catch the eye more than someone else. And that's just the way it goes, and that's just the pure reality of it. And then, look, it's different if you're gone into a first team environment. You're playing for points every week, and there's money on the line, there's all sorts, so you need to come together as a team. But
yeah,
when you're in an academy and trying to break through, then you need to look after yourself before anything else.
So it's more the academy and the reserves that you would notice that kind of individual.
Yeah, it's just trying to get that breakthrough. Now look, you need a lot of luck as well to get it, but you need to look after yourself when you're trying to get into that first team environment.
Yeah. So you were gone from 16, and then when you came back, obviously, were you surprised at the level of preparation involved in the GAA? I know you played senior football with Waterford last year. You played against Clare in the Munster Championship.
Yeah. Look, there's obviously always going to be that gap between the, let's say, professional football and amateur GAA here, but like everyone is trying to do it in the right way nowadays, get more and more professional. But obviously, look, yeah, people need to go to work and they need to go training in the night times, where over there you can just fully concentrate on your training. So there always is going to be that gap, and it's probably never going to change. But the level of actually professionalism once you're training and what's put on board for you, is there's not a huge amount of difference.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I saw your manager, Darrow Sullivan, talking about playing Six Mile Bridge last week. He said you could see the amount of strapping on our lads after that game. And maybe that is the big thing. Now you have 2 weeks break before Boris Ali, is recovery. Stephen Hunt kind of created a bit of controversy in Ireland here, probably when you were away, that he wrote that GAA players wouldn't be able for the lifestyle in England because you'd be sitting on the couch all day trying to recover and it's boring. And everyone was up in arms about this. God, I'd love to sit on the couch all day. But he was painting a picture. A lot of the professional game is just lounging about recovering your body, and the GAA can't really do that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. Like, you could be over in England and you're going to train at 9 o'clock and you could be home at 1 o'clock. Now, it seems great, but all the rest of that day, you're probably sitting in front of the TV or whatever. You might go off for a walk or whatever, but there is a lot of downtime, and you need to try and make use of that in the best way you can to recover and stuff. But it can become really, really boring, and you can see why people fall into silly things, gambling, all that kind of stuff, because of the amount of downtime you have over there. And it's a huge mental part of the game. But look, after a while you do get used to it and it just becomes your normal life. But it is very tough. Like,
yeah, exactly. And I suppose, like, obviously today your recovery will probably be done after you finish work rather than during that day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll finish up work here at 4:30 and I'll probably go out to the sea, and then we'll have a recovery session ourselves tonight in Ballygunner or whatever it is. But yeah, that's just the way it is. You have to go to work and then you have to do your recovery. But look, thankfully, we have that opportunity to even go to Ballygunner tonight, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's not the end of the world.
No point in complaining about it. Come here, what are you doing? You mentioned you finished work at 4:30, because I was reading an article when you arrived home saying that you're going to go back studying or whatever. Like, I'm sure it was a difficult decision to sit down at your age and figure out, you know, what you're going to do with your life.
Yeah, it is. And it was really tough, to be honest. That's probably the toughest thing I had to deal with since I came home, was figuring out what I was going to do next. And look, I said I'd go work for a little while and see how I find that. I'm working in store logistics in Waterford, so that's it for the moment. But hopefully I'll get back to college now next September, please God, if everything goes well. And that's my aim, is to get back studying and get a career for myself. I could easily look at soccer for another while, but I knew it was never going to last forever, and I needed a backup, because obviously I didn't finish my leaving cert before I left to go to England. So that's next for me now, hopefully get stuck back into the books.
Yeah, very good. And is the GPA helping you out with stuff like that?
Yeah, they will. They will eventually. I've had a bit of talk with them at the moment, but it's still kind of early days. It's not till next September. The applications and stuff don't open until February, so I have a little bit of time to make sure it's the right decision of whatever I try and go do.
Yeah, I know you're concentrating on Ballygunner and everything, but you've scored 424 from play so far this season. Has Liam Cal any numbers flashing up on your phone that you don't recognise, or voicemails left or anything like that?
Not yet, no, but look, yeah, I think we're just left concentrating on Ballygunner for the moment. A lot of the lads are the same, so we'll just concentrate on that for the moment. But look, it's great for Waterford Hurling to have a new manager like Liam Cal involved after doing so well with Tip under 20s and minors, that he seems to be a real winner, and it could be brilliant for Waterford going forward, because let's be honest, it hasn't been the best few years for Waterford hurling, but hopefully we'll get back to that now.
Yeah,
in the summer.
Exactly. So you're available for selection is basically what we're taking from that anyway. So if Liam Cal, I'll pass on your number him.
Yeah. I wouldn't say no anyway.
Come here, Desi. Thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck in the Munster final.
No bother. Thanks very much.
The let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I'll tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
All right, so Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend. We haven't really done Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend, and we have to give this the context that we wouldn't have seen a lot of these games as well. So Hubert Darcy, we have to give Padraic Pearse's. I haven't been giving Padraic Pearse's the attention that they deserved, and I'll make sure to correct that before the Connacht final. Hubert Darcy, you have a little bit of a thing about Hubert Darcy. You love him.
Yeah.
He scored 1-1 from full forward, and the thing about Hubert Darcy with me is this kind of first impressions bias. When I saw Hubert Darcy, first, he's playing as a working kind of wing forward for Roscommon. He's a big lump of a fella.
And now
I have him pegged down as an old working dog. He plays full forward for Padraic Pearse's, and he's well able to score.
I mean, most working dog wing forwards are well able to score. He seemed to score 1-1 every game. It's just always beside his name. In fairness, I've seen him just play for Roscommon, but every time I look at a match report, it's Hubert Darcy, 1-1. And yeah, I have seen him take a couple of big fetches for Roscommon in midfield and full forward. And I like awkward players, nuisance of players. It's just very tough to handle. They're sort of not natural looking. And it's like, this is what he is. He's class player and he works hard, but it's just, I don't even know how you would go about trying to sort of handle him.
Yeah, no, exactly. So Padraic Pearse's beat Tyrconnell Gaels 2-10-8. I thought that would have been a potential banana skin for Padraic Pearse's, but obviously not. Good win for them. Owen Cleary scored 1-5. These are kind of the intercounty boys that stand up. Only one free, so he got 1-4 from play. Milltown Malbay beat Rathcormac 1-11 to 11 points. So, there was nothing in this. Obviously, we tipped Milltown Malbay to win, which they did, but it was a draw after normal time. It was, Milltown Malbay, we won the first half of extra time by 3 points. That pushed it out to 3 in it then. And, they were able to hold out from there. Yeah, but Owen Cleary, who's got a wand of a left peg and can kind of rotate from number 11 into number 13 and wherever you want in kind of in between that. So he's their main man, top quality player. Liam Sill scored 1-1. If you're playing Cora Finn, Liam Silk reminds me kind of Philly McMahon in that this new age style of play, he just bloody loves it.
Yeah.
It's very little defensive responsibilities, can get forward with impunity, whenever you want, without anyone ever bothering you. He just got inside for the goal. He wasn't even followed because you can kind of get lost in the middle. No one's really going to take, no one who's marking a zone is going to be too worried about the cornerback ghosting up. His finish was outstanding for his goal. That wasn't as easy as it looked. When a goalkeeper's rushing out at you, when he got the ball in his hand, I was saying in my head, go around him, because there's not much of an angle there.
Yeah.
I don't know, did he half mishit it, but it was a lovely little finish into the corner anyways. But he's constantly racking up big scores. And the answer here is stop dropping players back. Liam Silk loves it.
Yeah, he's basically playing half forward the whole game. The finish, I thought he deliberately sort of did that where he went over the ball and looked like he was going sort of high and just dropped it beneath the keeper's legs. He started that move as well, around the half forward line. He came off his shoulder and popped it, so it's strange that he wasn't picked up, but I think that's the beauty. It wasn't a great game, but Cora Finn, you could see when there's bodies back, they do move people around very well, and it's usually the full forwards come out and leave that space, and then people like Silk and the half forwards were going into it, and just one time you leave him free and it's a goal.
Yeah, no, so he's a top quality cornerback. Desi Hutchinson is another nomination. Obviously, we spoke to him in part two. He scored 4 from play in the first half and then got another one in the second half. He's unmarkable. His movement is unbelievable, and he's going to be a huge addition to Waterford senior hurlers next year, because he's just a top class player, and when he gets it into his hand, he only knows one thing: go at his man, cut back, stick it over the bar. He's a really exciting player. You know, he is a crowd pleaser and one we're all looking forward to watching next year. David Clifford got 1-3. His brother, Paddy, got man of the match. He got only got 1 point. So he must have played bloody well to get man of the match ahead of David. But David just keeps ticking every single box. 1-3 now in a county final, where you need to stand up and be counted, an individual goal at an important time to push it out to score. And, like, I mean, what more can that man do? 4 from playing 2 All-Ireland finals against the best team we've ever seen. He's only 20. Like, I mean, it's just... we're going to be tired talking about him, to be honest with you. But he will go down. If he doesn't get injured, he'll go down as the greatest forward Kerry have ever had, I think. Now, they will need to win a few All-Irelands probably, because then again, for an individual kind of accolade like that, do you need the All-Irelands? This kind of idea that Messi can't be as good as Maradona because he's got no World Cup, I think that's a load of nonsense. It depends on the team around you. Dublin happened to be incredibly professional and organised when they wouldn't have been in any other era, you know, of Kerry football. So the team they're going to have to go up against, you know, has been cranked up. I'm sure David will win 2 or 3 All-Irelands.
Yeah, like, it's just people, like, with Messi, he's got an opportunity of winning stuff that people recognise as well, whereas Clifford has to win the championship for it to go beside his name. Do you know, when you think of all those players, like even Neymar and stuff, oh, they need to go to a bigger club now to really, like, you know, be the best player in the world. So I think it does come with the territory where you have to be winning championships and inspiring your team to do it
in those big games.
I know it's harsh, people have worse teams.
Well, like, I mean, to be honest with you, what else could he have done in those 2 All-Ireland finals? Like, I mean, did he get 4 from play both days?
Yeah.
I think he got 4 from play both days. Mark and Johnny Cooper destroying Johnny Cooper, Mark and Fitzsimons. Now, they didn't get over the line, but that wasn't him not standing up and being counted.
Yeah.
So, like, for individual accolades like that, you don't necessarily have to have won. It looks good. You know, if he did it in a game Kerry won, you'd be lauded. Sometimes unbelievable performances can be lost because you don't win.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, not bringing Paddy Bradley into this conversation, but, like, I could never say, for instance, that he's the greatest of all time. Like, if we're talking about
even
the best,
no matter how much you want to.
Yeah, but it is because, like, you know, Derry were never at that level, they never won All Ireland. So I think you do have to do it to be considered one of the best. Like, you know, when you look back, you'll compare Cooper and O'Callaghan will come into it and stuff, and you'll compare how many All-Irelands they won to. He's like Messi in that I saw a couple of pictures. His goal was class in the top left corner, but it's like he's always inviting you to take it off him. He's holding it out there, and then he just, as soon as you try to take it off him, you're beaten.
Yeah.
So the lesson is just be beaten anyway.
He's just such an impressively huge man with so much skill. He's freakish. He's freakish in that, to have that level of skill and that accuracy, but be that big.
Yeah.
You know, don't want to compare Donny Kingston to him, but Donny Kingston's the only other person who's 6'4" or 6'5" that has that kind of ball skills. It's not something that you have, you kind of associate.
We got Paddy Bradley and Donny Kingston into this conversation.
Our own county man.
That's terrible.
It actually is, isn't it? All right, Michael Dermacauley and Conal Keeney, I'm giving them a joint nomination. Michael Dermacauley only came on as a sub. He had a head concussion, but it wasn't because of that he didn't start. It was because he has carrying a groin injury and they probably expected to win it, and they're just giving him a bit of a rest. Conal Keeney injured his hamstring in the semi-final, didn't even get on in the county final, so he's back in the mix. He scored 2 points. Michael Dermacauley made a huge impression. This was 3-3 at half-time and Ballyboden had a man sent off. I was thinking these are in trouble here. It was 7-5 when Michael Dara came on, and he won a penalty immediately and then set up Colin Baskell for a goal. How he won the penalty was a little bit funny. It's pure Michael Dermacauley. So he's running in a huge slalom and run after winning the ball in midfield. You know the way he's running just so fast.
Yeah.
He's doing a big, huge, aggressive bounce, and then he goes to solo it, and he solos it two foot up over his head. But the fact that he soloed it so badly, it tricked the goalkeeper, Colm Judge, who tripped him up as he was looking up to reach up. Is there anything more Michael Dermacauley than that? Like, you know, a skill letting him down, but an incredible kind of driving force. And then catches another ball in midfield, drives forward, pass it off to Baskell, goal. That game over then, that goes to 1. Oh, Colin Baskell actually chipped the penalty over the bar to put 4 in it. And then Colin Baskell scored a goal then, or 7, and it's game over. Good luck.
the only thing that's missing for Michael Darmacolley is like accidentally headbutting someone in the nose. Remember the Jamie Connolly one before the Ireland final where he went to hug him from behind and during the warm up?
Oh yeah.
Whenever
yeah,
we
yeah,
came
yeah,
on his
yeah,
back, Connolly got whiplash. Like yeah, yeah, and he was holding his neck, and I was like, that's so Michael Darmacolley. He's trying to be friendly, but he's too much of a giant and too clumsy for this world. Like, and he's yeah, just messing everything up.
Exactly, exactly. So that's the last nomination. Look, I'm sorry to you, Conan and Hubert Darcy, but I'm going to give it to Desi Hutchinson. We know that if you've played the televised game and you play really well, you have to be in the mix above a fella who we haven't seen at all. We haven't seen at all. Desi Hutchinson was unplayable in the first half yesterday. So he deserves Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend. So that's it, Conan.
Well done, Desi.
Well done, Desi. We will be back on Thursday where we'll preview the weekend's matches. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's harder to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later, but not a lot of